measure. And really we should think of four as 3 plus 1. Three of them we understand beautifully well, at least to present acceptable energy. They are described by Yang-Mills theories. So what is Yang-Mills theory? Yang-Mills theory is a generalization of good old electromagnetic theory, good old ELM. And these quantum field theories are based on local quantum fields, which are vectorial fields. And they describe beautifully the electromagnetic, the weak and strong interactions. Here, as a reminder, I wrote down the action, but if you know it, of course, it's a fundamental thing. If you don't, you can ignore it. The claim being that this generalization of the electromagnetism based on this gate group, more about that shortly, describes completely what gets to that matter. But anyway, at least conceptually, we understand Yang-Mills theory fairly well. And then, of course, we have gravity. Classical gravity is described at least large distance by general relativity. And there is a strong naive parallel between the theories, but as soon as you start getting into details, you see that there are also several differences. But let's start with the parallels. Both classes of theories are described by local symmetry principles. So in the case of gauge theories, but let's start first with good old ELM. This is the symmetry principle that we have local invariance under such a shift of the gauge field. And of course, I did not bother to write down the electric and magnetic fields, but the way you motivate this in your first class in ENM, the physical fields are electric and magnetic field, they introduce some vector potential. In fact, A0 is the scalar potential, and the three-dimensional spatial components of A mu are so-called vector potential, and physics only depends on B and B, not on the vector potential. This redundancy description is captured by this local effect. So I'm using standard physics notation. This index mu runs over four-dimensional space indices. So it goes from 0, which is time-like index, to 3, 1, 2, and 3 are the space indices, and x is point in our fixed four-dimensional space-time. Of course, we are familiar with the idea that as we quantize the field, we get particles. This is the famous wave-particle duality. In the context of quantum field theory, if we think of the fields as being the fundamental variables, those are the things that we integrate over in our path integral, in our Lagrangian, and then upon quantization, the quantum of the fields are identified as the particles, and in the case of ELM, this is the photon propagator, mu and nu being the space-time indices, so it's a vector particle. Alternatively, we could take a completely equivalent viewpoint, which is to think in terms of the individual world lines of the particles. And if we did so, I did not bother to write down Feynman diagrams for quantum electrical dynamics, but for example, you could have, say, electron impulse manipulating into a photon and then emitting an electron pulse there again. And we could think as a complete equivalent description of following the trajectories in space-time of the individual particles and the vertices in the Feynman diagrams are where the particle split and join. So the parallel here is, of course, that general activity has general covariance. So A mu being the gauge field, and mu being the metric. And if we at least do this naive thing of quantizing small fluctuations around some classical solution, say, for example, around flat space, well, we get a spin 2 particle, the graviton. So in a fairly clear sense, ELM is about spin 1 objects, and gravity is about spin 2 objects. And this is really sort of the point of view that comes from particle physics. If you try to think of gravity in a fixed background as a field theory, well, then what you're just describing is propagation of spin 2 particles and gravitons. And of course, being that in soil archer you have more indices and the structure becomes more complicated, but at least the principle that you can do this exercise of defining the theorem is by its more complicated, you know, save that space. So there is a fairly precise science which has been exploited for actual calculations. Yes?
I was just wondering why you call this your markers an invariant for locals. In the top, you said two distinct locals in this
region. Well, we, of course, we can. If what you mean is that this symmetry will kill local observables, we completely agree.
That's before,
that's right. So, yeah, I'm just using the usual. I'm not saying anything more than the usual standard. So, the symmetry is local in the sense the parameter of the transformation depend on. I'm just using the standard Peters parallel. The local here means that lambda depends on x, and this c, although it's right here, depends on x. I'm not trying to make
a bigger deal than this. It's not a rigid symmetry.
It's not a rigid symmetry. That's what I'm saying. The rigid symmetry would be from where we started with the So, anyway, I'm just drawing this analogy, which is a standard textbook analogy between gauge bosons and gravitons. And there is a fairly precise sense when you start doing perturbative calculations in which you may think as calculations in gravity perturbative in this expansion of the catastrophe ground as obtained by squaring gauge theory calculations. And this gives you some mileage in actual calculations. So this is fairly obvious, but it's also clear that as soon as you start probing deeper, there are differences as well. One difference, which we are going to explore in detail later, is that the electromagnetic field can admit a beautiful generalization to a matrix valued field. So instead of having just a mu, we introduce indices I and j. So for example, here I'm considering the simplest case where we take the gauge field to be un. And then we think of these fields as permission matrices. I and j, if you wish, transform the fundamental and fundamental of this un group. And then dropping the Lorentz indices u and u for clarity, then your propagator will pick up indices I, j, k, l. And there is a non-trivial generalization of electromagnetic theory to non-abelian theories, where the gauge group is not just a one phase that commutes commutative group, but you have the non-abelian generalization. And what that tells you instantly, I mean, I wrote the Lagrangian in the beginning, but anyway, the field strength f mu nu now becomes quadratic in A, which means that you also get cubic and quartic. So that these fields are self-interactive. And so quantization gives you your gluon fields, which is a fairly trivial generalization of ELM, but there is no such generalization to gravity, at least as far as I know. And then, of course, the quantum theories are very different. As soon as you start doing the perturbative calculations, you realize that whereas the Amitz theory is a normalizable, although it may take you some work to prove it, but at least very naively, just by power count, just to the simple exercise you could learn the field theory in the classes, just look at quantum terms, counting their mass dimension, you see that since the coupling constant dimensions of the theory is normalizable, but gravity, of course, as a dimensional coupling constant of, there are normalizable terms as you start expanding the Einstein-Hilbert actually, from background, and so you run into the problem of normalizability. So finally, especially to this audience, there is, of course, a deeper conceptual issue that was on purpose divided in the previous slide, which is, well, What is all this nonsense of talking about doing gravity expanding perturbation around things? It's in the classical background. That, of course, makes sense for young Mills fields. We can fix the geometry once and for all, and we expand the field AU around some classical configuration. But gravity is not a field theory. Gravity is about the geometry of space-time. And certainly, if you start expanding around a fixed and classical ground, you lose sight of the fact that the original gravitational action was background independent. You get the different backgrounds as classical solutions of the Einstein-Hilbert action, and then expansion around them gives you your perturbative gravitons. But certainly, as soon as you start doing the expansion, the ground independent is the best practice. So, very good. So this is what I'm going to tell you about gauge theories and gravity in the sort of standard point particle limit. And now we graduate to string theory. So the idea is very simple. We replace point particles with one-dimensional objects, which are strings. And really, here I invite you to think about the theory just as I was trying to emphasize before. We think of the individual strings propagating in space-time. We follow the world sheet of the strings, and they can split and join. That's how they interact. And the absolutely most basic fact about string theory, which is the main lesson of this talk, is that the most important fact about string theory is that strings can be open or closed. And that has the consequences. So again, you can compute scattering amplitudes when you put your external closed string state on shell by summing over all possible weight to embed the worship of the string into a three-dimensional space-time. So you must sum over different topologies of worship, and for each given topology, you must integrate over all possible moduli of the surface. So in fact, there is a standard trick. So this tube, so after seeing this for the closed strings, you are supposed to think of these tubes to be very, very long. You are computing some S-matrix elements, so you are putting the external state on shell. And as the cubes become very, very long, you can make a conformal transformation on your two-dimensional worksheet and turn these diagrams into a more useful way for computation, which in which you turn this external very, very long tube into a localized insertion. I'm using here for closed strings. For closed strings, the corresponding two-dimensional surface would be a closed surface. And the external insertions are special points for surface. In fact, if you want to compute a specific element, you start to integrate over all possible ways to see for the points on the surface. That's part of the integration you do. And for open string, this is a somewhat ugly drawing, but anyway, this is a 4.3 level scattering up to open strings, which you can map on the disk with four special points for open string functions. And of course, there's a very sensitive technology for how you compute these diagrams using the techniques of two-dimensional conformal theory. They must integrate typically over the moduli of the surface, but at least pictorially, I hope this gives some rough idea of how the theory is defined in this perturbative expansion on a fixed background. In fact, as soon as you start probing a little deeper, specializing for simplicity to the case of the simplest theory, the bosonic string, well, you realize that if you insist that the theory be Poincaré invariant in the D dimension, then D is not arbitrary, D is equal to 26 as a critical dimension. It comes from the fact that it's only in this dimension that the local variable for the scaling of the two-dimensional metric decouples. The theory doesn't make sense for this smaller than 26, but then But then to lose parkering variance, yes.
Since the subject of rate fluorescent variance is not allowed to define experimentally, suppose you don't require front grand variance, but only that front grand variance be approximately below the skew scale.
There is a standard story that if you want to take so here I was really to consider the simplest possible answers in which you just take coordinates and you require to have sort of flat space background, and then if you insist on functioning variance, D is 6.6. You can do much more, of course. And one possible point to do about this is if you take B to be smaller than 26, then you can convince yourself by an analysis of the Buffett integral that the local variable that corresponds to the local rescalings of the two-dimensional surface, I mean, if you think of this as two-dimensional quantum gravity on the worksheet, the pi factor of Buffett's integral method becomes sort of a extra coordinate in space. And then these theories make perfect sense. There's nothing wrong with them. And they're studied in very low dimension. They're exactly solvable in factorized checking supply models. I should also add that the equivalent viewpoint about this is you're still doing critical shift theory, but in a trivial vector.
So why don't we do that just to keep us fundamental shift theory that way?
Well, what do you mean? C+1 dimension theory with factoring back C+1 dimension, that's...
You can have front-grain variance, but only connections to say positive front-grain
variance. That's right. Sorry, it's a very long story. If you...
So you can rule it out, just go on.
If you... Okay, for small dimensions, the theories are perturbative in the sense that you can go to the region of curve. There is indeed a linear Hilbert background, but you can sometimes put a potential wall that allows you to be in the region of weak coupling, and you can solve the theories for sufficient low dimension. Anyway, this is really just to give a flavor of the subject. In some sense, since I'm doing the bosonic string, you may object from the start that the theory doesn't really make sense because of vacuums. Yes?
Of course, yes. So, how can you do predication?
It is true. I mean, you could say the same about many ordinary field theories, the perturbation theories, not but itself. And string theory perturbation is even worse because the perturbative expansion diverges worse for an ordinary field theory. But we do understand that quite well right now. We do understand the meaning of the divergence of the perturbative expansion. What are the leading perturbative effects? And of course, for the bosonic string, this is really just as an introduction to the toy model, but for superstring theory, although the perturbative expansion is divergent, we understand the physical significance of the divergent expansion, and there is a very strong evidence that the theory is ultimately consistent at the full perturbative level. You can turn a certain theory in different theories, you dial a coupling constant, which in the ground is sufficient amount of superstring you can do in a continuous way, and if your point, the perturbative expansion does not define the theory, that's of course true. That's true also. All non-trivial field theories.
The only point of theory is less divergent.
It is less divergent in ordinary quantum.
Much less.
But we do understand the meaning of this extra divergent string theory. It's related to perturbative objects, which will play a prominent role in the following. So there is no, sure, you cannot use the perturbative expansion to define the theory. Well, you have to, of course, we don't have yet know a fundamental, we don't yet know a fundamental perturbative definition of string theory, unless finite except especially simple prime models. But all the evidence points to the fact that the theory is consistently well defined. At the non-perturbative level, we can look at different limits, the degrees of freedom transmute as we go from week to week, some coupling, and we have a a good physical understanding of where what happens is now. So you can think about string theory as a collection from a space-time viewpoint. If you start expanding the string in modes, what you're getting is an infinite collection of space-time fields. That makes sense because instead of having a point particle that is the quantum field with a single quantum field, the string being a local object will give rise to an infinite collection of fields. And of course, at least for a sufficiently simple background, like for example, flat space, if you're in 6 dimensions, you can compute the spectrum of the string at wind coupling. And one immediate thing to discover is that because the zero point energy of this mode sum to the spectrum is negative, the first mode of the string has negative mass square, so it's a path. But what that buys you is actually something quite interesting, that the next level, so of course we don't quite understand packets, at least not yet. We will understand half of the story opens for packets with the remaining part of the talk, but you may worry that packets don't make sense. In fact, one possible historic path was just this galibus on a string with the superstring. But one thing you do discover if you put the next level, rather than the bosonic string, is there is a massless P1 field in the open string sector. And if you quantize a closed string, you find a massless P2 field. So, of course, these are our old friends, the gauge field and the graviton. So, string theory appears to unify these two basic pillars of quantum physics, gauge theory and gravity. Gauge theories are arising in the open sector, and gravity is arising in the closed sector. So open theory is the realization of the Young-Mills theory, and gravity is the realization, and closed theory is the realization of gravity. Of course, this does you something simply because, after all, open and closed strings are made of the same string, this stuff. What is different about them is only the global topology. Locally on the worksheet, the physics is much the same. So you may hope to gain some mileage out of this. And one immediate heuristic thing you gain, well, you get some kind of insight of why it was the case that you could generalize easily ELN to a non-abelian gauge theory, but generalization is easy for gravity. Well, if the gauge field is related to an open string, well, the endpoints of the string are special, so you may conceive numbering them. You may conceive putting an extra label at the left, at the right endpoints, where I and J go from 1 to N. These are called Champaton labels. And that generalizes your open string theory to a matrix value open string field. And what that means is that we are essentially taking seriously tooth notation for a non-abelian gauge field propagator. So recall how that story goes. So the propagator for the Young-Mills gauge field has this contraction. So I must be equal to K and J must be equal to L. That's the propagator. And tooth impacted is this sort of very useful notation. You split the gauge field propagator and make it in a little strip, and where the arrows tell you how the indices are running. And so you easily convince yourself that because of the overall, the fact that the cubic law propagator is phrase A cube, well, the indices, the glue propagator will be split into sort of three. The structure you get is these three open strips joining. And let me sort of maybe flash this transparency very quickly. This is sort of meant to remind you something that you've probably seen. Very generally, if you have a theory with adjoint fields, with matrix fields, you can perform this Tufts analysis, split the propagator into this strip, this sort of open string notation, and then you convince yourself that Feynman diagrams become polyhedra in a sense, and they admit a topological expansion, which, if you organize things in a clever way, fixing this parameter g squared n, the so-called proof coupling, this expansion is the 1 over n expansion. So, in this story, then, we are seeing, in some sense, very precisely how the Young-Hills field arises as the lowest mode, disregarding for now the vacuum, of the open string. In the point particle limit, the open string strips is very, very long, or if you wish to look from far away, you cannot tell the difference between a strip of finite width and a line. And so the open string degenerates to the Gluon propagator, but the double line notation is what is still keeping track of how the agents are contracting. So there is a very suggestive sense in which really open string generalizing its fields by making sort of putting some means into the two double line notation. And there are some special cases in which you can completely realize Young-Mills theories, I mean, certain gauge theories, for example, three-dimensional transactions theory, as the full, complete open string, all the mass modes that typically have the physical theory in some simple model is completely common. And finally, we gain another insight. String theory really unifies Young-Mills theory and gravity because, although as we take the particle limit, we may get confused and declare that these theories are very different because gravity is not normalizable and Young-Mills theory is normalizable. Well, in string theory, both are completely fine. The open and closed things are made of the same string stuff, and the fact that you have smeared out the interaction point cures the divergence, the perturbative divergence of quantum gravity. So, in fact, this idea goes much further. So far, we have seen that Young-Mills generalize to open strings and gravity generalize to closed strings. But in fact, open and closed strings are linked to each other in a way you cannot really separate them. So, there's a pretty simple argument that you can already see at the level of perturbative expansion, that the theory of open strings must necessarily contain closed strings. And the argument is as follows. Suppose you consider, for simplicity, consider the vacuum amplitude, which is a bit of a cheat. You should consider some planar amplitude of it with external open strings, but just for visualization purpose, if you consider the one loop amplitude of open strings, and you do, say, as usually done, you evaluate this taking the worksheet to the Euclidean. Well, of course, when you compute the Euclidean path integral of this dimensional worksheet, you can decide to slice it up as you please. So you can decide, you can redefine what you mean by worksheet time. In this way of writing the diagram, worksheet time runs in this loop. So as you slice the path integral, you find an open state that comes back to itself in the phase. Or, of course, you could decide to slice up this worksheet differently in the radial direction. And then what you see is the propagation of a closed state for a finite amount of worksheet time. And one can see by a slightly more specific analysis that necessarily a diagram which has, let's say, the simplest case of ice would be a diagram with a non-planar diagram with two standard open string states. Necessarily, there is a region in the as you integrate for the moduli space of this Riemann surface where, in the corresponding closed string language, this closed propagator becomes very, very long, and you're actually seeing a massless closed form. So, then unitarity will force to include closed strings and external asymptotic states. So the famous fact, in fact, how closed string theory region was discovered in the before, like, before even there was any interpretation of strings. By looking at poles in OpenStreetMap, I was realized that one had to a relative set of, at least the critical dimension, you have these new poles about the closed poles. And this highlights another famous feature of this connection between open and closed strings, that what is the high energy on the closed side, so when the loop becomes very short, the UV region, corresponds on the closed side to the infrared region where the tube becomes very long. And you can use these type of insights to simplify perturbative calculations. You use the technology of string perturbation theory to organize better the ordinary point particle limit of a gravity calculation, for example. So far, this is the argument that at already the perturbative level, a theory of open strings must contain closed strings. And in fact, one of the major discoveries of the 90s was the convergence of the two. Although to see that, you must work a little harder. And since the open string endpoints are special points, we can pin them on a specific hybrid surface that's always allowed. And we can declare that the string moves freely, except for the endpoints, which are constrained even on a certain hybrid surface. This is how we define so-called deep rings in string perturbation theory. And of course, that's by definition as long as you turn off the coupling constant. But as soon as you turn on the coupling constant a little bit, what can happen, for example, the metric can happen, for example, what can happen is that these two closed strings, two open strings on the deep ring will join and form a closed string which is emitted. And it sees it from virtual self that this object is actually a source for closed string. It's a closed string tadpole, which is induced by the fact that you have placed these directly bounded conditions for your open strings. So truly these objects are dynamical objects that react on the background geometry. And you must interpret the open strings that live on them as their physical excitations. In fact, in the modern way of looking at this, anytime we have closed open strings, we say that there is a deep ring. So the model, the current parlance is you start from the theory of perturbation, you start with the theory of closed strings, and introducing a deep ring is just a way of saying that you allow an extra open string center with specific boundary conditions. And if you go through a simple counting of powers of the string coupling constant, you realize that you can look at the decay of the fields far away, and you realize that this object has a mass, has a tension of order one of our the closed coupling constant, which is why you may have thought naively that at least perturbative you can just get away with closed strings. So as this coupling constant goes to zero, the object becomes very massive, and you can of course define a closed string perturbative expansion without including that. But it was discovered in the mid-90s that in cases where we have better control over this, for example, in spectrophotic fields, really the brains are very much part of the consistent non-perturbative definition of the theory. For example, they explain the back divergence of string perturbation theory, the fact that these photonic objects are 1 over g rather than 1 over g squared, means translating in that the growth of the perturbative function is much worse than usual. Of course, here I'm looking at deep brains. If you look at one of the growth of the perturbative function, you should look at instant tonic objects, which are completely localized, but you can see that one weak and strong coupling really require the presence of the brains. So the brains are necessary for non-perturbative consistency of the theory, and to summarize the argument, then open strings demand closed strings. That's already something you see in perturbation theory, but cannot get away just with the theory of closed strings, because the full non-perturbative consistency of the theory will demand that you have deep rings. So there's a close relation between open and closed string, which means there's a close relation between the amplitude and gravity, which is not something you see So far I've been emphasizing a first quantized viewpoint where, again, we think, all we do is we compute diagrams in string perturbation theory. There are these strings that can split, that can join, and I've drawn some of those diagrams. But it seems desirable to graduate instead to a viewpoint where, in analogy with what we do in ordinary field theory, we have some string fields, some functionals of the open or closed string configurations that, in a canonical approach, which is here, it's like in a canonical approach, you could think of those as the fields that create a certain configuration of open or closed strings, much less the way you can think of an ordinary quantum field that's the operator that creates a specific state with one particle. And there are many reasons why you may want to go into this direction. One, of course, is that we are used to the fact that in ordinary quantum particle theory, questions like vacuum selections, perturbative definition of the theory, are extremely hard to understand if you just were to stick to a first quantized description. So we may hope, somehow, if we are strong enough, to define a theory of string fields, and then you may want to understand how, for example, if you're really optimistic, maybe this is an old-fashioned viewpoint by now, but that's what that was the viewpoint in the mid-80s. Maybe if you fully understand this non-perturbative string field theory, we understand what is the true bound of string theory by finding the true of effect potential. Yes?
Isn't it true that all the old string field theories are unstable?
Unstable, you mean the calculus?
I think we saw a long time ago that string field theories are fine field theories.
No, but actually, in the case of the open string, we understand that now very well. That is what's going to happen in a moment. The vacuum is there and it has a direct physical interpretation. For closed strings, for the bosonic closed string, well, we have no clue of what is the meaning of the
calculus. Maybe go ahead, because I know the issue you raised, but it's not the calculus.
Okay. So once we graduate from a first to a second quantized viewpoint, then I've been emphasizing so far you cannot have open strings without closed strings, you can have closed strings without open strings. And that is absolutely correct, but once you graduate to a second quantized viewpoint, then it becomes more of a question, really. Should one integrate this path integral over the string fields, both over an open and a closed string field? So, by the way, if you have noticed, I've consistent color code where red things are open and closed things are and blue things are closed. So indeed, it may be that's the answer. You can introduce both an open and a closed string field, and in fact, that's what you can do in the Lyapunov quantization of string theory. You can cook up some second quantized action that more or less by construction reproduces the perturbative expansion of the theory. And what happens is that you have independent open and closed string fields. And the interaction vertices, I've done quite a few here. For example, you have a cubic closed vertex, a cubic open vertex, a quadratic open vertex, and then you also have things that mix up open and closed things. So, for example, this is the open and closed vertex, and then you have two open and one closed vertex. That would be, so this diagram here, for example, would be open closed vertex. So, it would be this one. It is a closed string that opens up in an open string. And this is the cubic vertex for three closed string joining. And you can prove that you can reproduce the perturbative expansion of the theory by appropriate set of final rules where you need to specify a certain prescription how you glue the surface. So it does really make a difference once you want to go to the second quantized approach, how you are going to glue the surfaces, and if you are in the light cone, it's the correct description. There is, however, a more beautiful third, I think, that at least works for the bosonic string, which is to get away completely with the open string field alone. So this is the open string field theory of Wittgen. Psi is the open string field. And he had sort of an inspired paper in which he observed that, well, if you just take this kinetic term, then more or less by construction you are obtaining the correct spectrum, because if you vary the kinetic term, you're getting the ordinary on-shell condition that the PRST operator kills the open string field. And then he drew an analogy with Shannon Simon's theory, where psi plays the role of the one form and q plays the role of the differential operator. And said, well, suppose I was able to invent a way to multiply open string function was associative, then I could just add the cube of the string field, and also I must be able to invent an integral operation which is linear, as a nice property that you also have in Simon's theory, and then you get instantly a generalization which has an abelian gauge invariance. So this is a way you need to generalize the massless gauge invariance of the U1 gauge field to the full power of the open string noise. And the crucial insight that you can do that in an extremely simple way, just with a cubic vertex, if you find a way for the open strings to join in a way which is associative. And as soon as you have that insight, then it's immediate to construct such a product. This is the interaction vertex of three open strings. The only way you can get an associative product is the open strings function joined at the midpoint. So you can think of this picture as, you know, you have an open string which has which occupies a specific configuration in space-time, so delta function with this particular support. And it interacts with the second closed string only if and only if the left portion of the first string exactly overlaps with the right, the right portion of the first string S exactly overlaps with the left portion of the string T, and the product, the result of the interaction is this string where you you take the other, the half of your probability. And this is the multiplication of three strings, and because of this midpoint symmetric interaction, you can see easily that if you multiply first S and T and then U, or alternatively, if you first multiply T and U and then S, the result does not change. So this is an extremely simple theory, as simple theory is good, but it's still, believe me, the complications are hidden in the clever notation. So this is again the this midpoint joining of open strings. And what this really, the reason why this is working so beautifully is that this this simple final rule, where you just have an open string as your propagator and a single cubic vertex, as I was showing before, where the open string is at the midpoint, I have to give a complete decomposition of all Riemann strings released from boundary. But this is a fairly amazing thing. If you were trying to decompose a moduli space Riemann surface using instead closed propagators and cubic vertices of this kind, you get an awful mess. And you realize that to get all the surfaces, you need to introduce arbitrarily many higher pointers for the frequencies and so on. Whereas with open strings, you just manage to get all that you need. And the really interesting result is that you're really covering all the moduli. As long as you have at least one external boundary or one external crossing, it's also sufficient because you can always think of the external crossing puncture. You can blow it up a little bit and think of it as an infinitesimal boundary. As so long as you have you are in that situation, you can get away just with with open streets. So the open street variables are sufficient to completely discover, at least perturbatively, the theory. So in this approach, crossings emerge as a derived concept, and one way to think about them, there are certain gauge invariant observables, certain singular configuration of the open street field, and you can actually picture what that configuration is fairly precisely by looking at how the amplitude is factorized on the closed poles. You take a strip, this open strip, you insert you close it off on one side, you read off the open string function on this side, and you fold the open string in such a way that this is designed, the left and right hand side of the closed open strings are identified here, and you state the closed string and the contour singularity. So this is a fairly singular description that only works if your closed string is on shell, but it does work. You are able, in this way, to describe aspects, elements with certain crossing just in a theory that where you are quantized with just open strings. There was a question about that.
I was just wondering, so the open strings get all the closed string amplitudes, etc.
That's correct. But
any functions generate and get generated.
They generate all the dynamics at least one part. In fact, you may think of doing something a little, something clever that will come in a moment, in which even if you just have an amplitude with purely closed strings, as long as you have closing punctures, you can think of replacing the puncture with an infinitesimal hole. If you are able to find sufficiently clever boundary conditions such that the hole really wants to shrink and become a closing puncture, that will give you a way to compute an arbitrary closing amplitude just with open strings. And in fact, you can actually do that at some points. So the loose analogy here, which I'm not going to emphasize too much because it's more imprecise, is that if the open strings are like the gluons, then the closed strings are like the blue balls. The analysis is imprecise because blue balls emerge non-perturbatively, where here we are getting the closed string ready in the non-loop amplitude. But what the analysis does capture is the fact that the closed in this, you will not be tempted to add blue ball fields in QCD. The QCD Lagrange is all there is. If you want to compute the scattering amplitude of external blue balls, well, you can of course do that by introducing fictitially some composite fields. And then that's just a bookkeeping device, but the variables for really integrating over just the blue ones. Similarly here, you can compute scattering of external closed strings, and if you desire, you can introduce a source for this set of on-shell closed string. But this is not a fundamental field, it's just a bookkeeping device. Instantly, what the closed string wants to do is split up in an open string according to the open-closed vertex, and then you can glue this to the rest of the dot diagram and get the correct aspect acceptance. So, if you were to include a closed string field phi and integrate over it, you'll be overcome. Okay, so we got closed strings just from open strings without deep brains. Well, this is really the insight of the last few years. Deep brains arise into description as classical solutions. So far we've been doing the bosonic string for a reason, not only because it's simple, but because it illustrates some of the key ideas here. The key idea is the reinterpretation due to SEM of the open string pattern as simply signaling the fact. Remember, open strings are nothing but the excitation of the deep brain. The fact that there is a pattern means that you are expanding the theory around the wrong pattern. So this is the usual pattern where you have your deep brain. The fact that the pattern potential has a maximum here means that what you really want to do is to roll down this hill, find the minimum of the pattern, of the open pattern, and what is the physical expression of the mirror? Well, it's simply the place where the deep brain has disappeared, the brain has decayed. Deep brains in the theory are unstable. if you leave them there, or if you keep them at eight, or if you're at the quantum level, you don't leave them to anything, just leave them there, they will want to decay into radiation. Classically, if you forget about quantum effects, of course you could, if you infinitely fine-tune yourself, you could just sit there at this maximum forever. But as soon as you displace yourself a little bit away from the maximum, if you are carefully displacing yourself in the right way, the right, after a while you will end up in the minimum where the debris has disappeared. And this is a classical process in open system. Here, the open system packet being one of the very many fields of your open system field, but it's the one that drives the condensation process. You could integrate the other ones classically, get some effective flattening potential at roughly this kind of shape. So in this picture, you see, we are getting, at least for this simplified problem, precisely the kind of margin you would expect to get from simple theory, which is you get some kind of global picture of the set vacuum effect. So this is the unstable vacuum that corresponds to the original debris. This is the stable vacuum that corresponds to having no debris. But you can also have, if you think a little bit about it, also have interpolating solutions that asymptotically in one along one sort of spatial direction xp go towards the stable vacuum and then explore the maximum for a final region. So these lumps, you can find this classical solution, these are lumps, and that interpretation they correspond to a debris which is localized along this direction. So if you start with a debris which is, so in this picture, T as a function of x being constant and sitting here is the stable vacuum. It is this point. T being constant and sitting here is the, if you wish, the one grain. And this lump configuration is a debris which is localized on x, it's a PCO. Yes.
So if it doesn't want to end works with, what is it going to do when you roll into the left?
Well, nobody knows. We presume that means the bosonic string is inconsistent. So, in fact, I should have answered differently. I think I know that it's the bosonic string inconsistent because if you look at two-dimensional string theory, where the model is exactly solvable, I'm going to say something that we're going to assume that people know this. But in that case, you have this inversion harmonic potential filling only one side of the eigenvalues. And that means, clearly that means that the theory is susceptible to runaway behavior where your Fermi surface on one side will want to tunnel, the other side you decrease the eigenvalue of the way to have the degree. But on the other hand, we know if now the solution in modern terms of that problem, you fill both sides of the inverse harmonic potential, and then you get a supersymmetric theory. So in that case, I think we see quite clearly that the bosonic theory by itself is inconsistent. So that process also, I noticed that that process has nothing to do with the closing path. There were several speculations that going towards the wrong side is some sickness and do with the closing factor, but the case of two-dimensional string theory illustrates quite clearly that that's not the case because there is no closing factor.
Almost the same for type 2.
Sorry?
The type 2 theory is not closing factor, it's not happening, it's runaway potential.
That's correct. That's the other words. Yes?
So are you saying that closed string field theory is inconsistent for two different reasons? One, because it has a tachyon, and secondly, because it has this unbounded.
If you wish. I mean, the theory is with the bosonic theory in 20 dimension. Well, I don't know. Maybe someday makes sense. If I don't know. There are speculations. We as you condense a closed path, you flow somewhere interesting place.
So there might be some analog discussions.
There might be, but the condensation of the closed path is much harder for us because you cannot control it just in classical approximation. You really the back edge really forces you to take into account the product physics. So it's a much harder problem. Speculation, maybe if you take the bosonic, the 26 dimensional bosonic field, a specific lattice, and you let the cosine condense through a branch, you let the lattice in a clever way, maybe you will float the supersphere. There are speculations, but not.
You may get further through. So in the super theory, is this instability interpretation still hold?
No, in the super theory, actually, it turns out that basically you have a double well. So you just, the potential is met under a flip. So yes, you don't have this sickness anymore flowing to the wrong side of the potential, but you still have the interpretation of having a stable D-brains that won't decay to the place.
So the D-brains are still located at the local max.
Absolutely, yes. So even in the super theory, although this is something that in the super theory there are also unstable D-brains that were. The fish is more interesting, more exciting, more complicated because now they can carry charges. There's a more D-brains can carry charge and you can have a little bit more fun. But anyway, the basic story is that there are D-brains that carry no charge and that are unstable and the physics is much the same. So in some sense, that's why I'm not worrying about what happens with the land, because there are more complicated, slightly more complicated models where. That's there, but looking at the bosonic theory or the captions of the this decay process. So you can have fun and check in extreme detail the fact that this gap in energy is precisely the brain tension. That was one of the sense conjecture. We did that, and things were, you have to work really hard because at some point. So this is something which is called the level truncation. Basically, you chop the string field to the lowest nodes, and amazing enough, things converge extremely rapidly. You get into some confusion because at some point you overshoot the expected answer, but the more sophisticated analysis shows that in fact first overshoot, but then you come back. So things work really well. So at least. For this simplified problem of what I would call the open string landscape. So we fix the closed module, I fix the geometry once and for all. And we consider the possible open string boundary condition, that is the possible D-brain configurations. And then what has been discovered, this is quite reassuring, that classically the open string theory not only captures the perturbative physics, it also contains some particular information. It's classical solution running one-to-one correspondence with the, at least so long as we can trust it. Several examples have been studied, are one-to-one correspondence with the various D-brain configurations. So in some sense, you may wish to call this background independence for the open string moduli. In the sense, if you have a global picture where you get a different value by expanding setting point by theory on the different class configurations. Although I should emphasize that the background dependent is something you get in retrospect, you get a posteriori. The formulation of theory is not manifest in background dependent. It's only once you analyze the fact that you start from one classical solution, get all the others, that you recognize that half of the theory is background dependent. So, I should probably head towards my conclusion. I have a couple of more slides. I think recent work points to a so basically the you see that what I've been emphasizing the last few minutes is there are some hints coming from Center for Wind and Open City theory that you can formulate string theory just quantizing the open city variables. The brains are classical solutions. Closed strings emerge as gauge invariant singular functionals. And the more precise way to phrase what I said is what Sen has called the open string completeness conjecture, which is the following statement. consider a configuration of a finite number n of D-brains and formulate, look at its four-quadrant dynamics, which you can formulate using open string theory just with open string variables, and the claim is that this is by itself a consistent quantum field. You don't need to introduce closed chain degrees of freedom in addition to this. In general, you may expect this not to describe the complete string theory, but a proper subset of it. And in some cases, as you span various choices of boundary conditions for the open strings, as you send the number of D-brains to infinity, you may, in fact, recover the full filter space of the full string theory. So I want to very briefly, there are various case studies you can analyze now to convince that this is the correct picture. A particularly physical one is the one which look at the process of the D-brain decay in real time. So you can look at that. So there are two things you can do. You can think either of, in terms of the world problem because of freedom, you start from the top of this potential, you roll down. So that means finding some classical solution of open substitute that has some time dependence. And in fact, you can do that, and you discover that these solutions are quite peculiar. They are such that, well, of course, everything is localized along the direction of the brain. There's a delta function for the transverse direction of the brain. The energy is constant, this is 0, 0 for the strength tensor, and the pressure, somewhat surprisingly, tends to 0 for large times. This is not what you naively expect. What you naively expect is start rolling down. You naively expect to oscillate infinitely many times around this stable vacuum. And when you put closing effects from the back reaction, you expect to dampen yourself because of the emitter radiation. But classic, you expect just go back and forth. In fact, that's not what happens. The pressure tends to 0. That's from an analysis of the open string boundary conformality theory. And you can repeat the analysis in the closed sector by, so remember the D-brain is a source for the closed modes. Since now you have a time varying source, you will get parkourish, if you have made a conformality theory. So if you analyze the particles that get emitted, the closing that get emitted, you discover that essentially all the energy goes in extremely massive string modes with the mass of the order one of the inverse couplings. And asymptotically large time, the D-brain is replaced by a very thin gas of heavy dust with zero pressure, where the dust is the closed string. High massive closed modes.
So just because there are so many massive modes, it's dominated by?
No, it's not just that. That plays a role.
What's wrong with the naive intuition that it's harder to create a very massive particle than a low mass?
I'm reluctant to say it's because of the large, well, yes, it's essentially because of the large generics, but you're not even exponential the generics with which it is done. It is just also holds true in two dimensions, where you don't have an exponential large number of growth. I think you're essentially right. It must be looked at the asymptotic growth states. Although it's still true. Okay, I don't get to the eventual security, but the basic point is that this dust is non-relativistic. It moves very slowly, it has zero pressure, and it is, now the point is, you look at these two descriptions, and you realize that they are dual to check, that you are looking at the same thing from two different points. It would be wrong to try to describe the system from both of the viewpoints simultaneously. So the open string description is consistent with by itself. The closed string description gives you just another dual viewpoint. So two-dimensional string theory, you can do this in a string detail. In that case, the open string theory is the quantum mechanics of fermions and a harmonic oscillator. This fermion quantum mechanics is in fact harmonic oscillator potential where you fill in this fermion level up here. And then the rolling of the tachyon can be pictured as the trajectory of this eigenvalue of this fermionic mode, just going towards the Fermi scene. And here you can absolutely convince yourself, you can tap with your hands the fact that the two descriptions are dual to each other. You're not supposed to put both types of your fermions at the same time because that would be overcounting. In fact, the fermionic open string mode and the bosonic closed mode are just related by bosonization. It's an exact equivalent of descriptions. And one other lesson that you learned here is that the open string description is the less singular one. The closer description becomes ill-defined near the maximum, whereas the open description is always going to be. So, I was advertising before that you may get some, you may get this idea of computing a purely closed string amplitude. In this case, the string to with 3 and 7 closed strings. In some sense, by blowing up the punctures to little holes. Or if you want to think about this differently, compute the vacuum open string amplitude for different choice of boundary conditions for different set of membranes. And then intuitively, as you integrate by the modulus of each hole, you get to replace the hole by some of our closed string insertions. And if you have lots of membranes, you may be able to invert this relation. You may be able to actually read off. You tell me which particular closed string you want to look at. And since I have lots of membranes that can shrink to various types of subs of a closed function, you may be able to invert this relation in function of cases. And this is in fact precisely what happens in the Concierge model for string theory low dimension. And there are other similar examples in topological string theory. It's a very powerful way to compute after getting management that the open string description is the simplest one. So I did not tell you, because of course you already know all of it, that the most famous example of this open string is of course in this Fico correspondence, where the open side is n equal 4 squared and the closed side is in theory the squared plus 5. And my own hunch about this is that although the ESXP correspondence is usually motivated as by taking low energy in the open cyclobinding membranes, there should be a way to understand this as an exact open closed duality where you realize n equal 4 squared means as the full open string theory on some perfect set of membranes. So, finally, let me conclude with some thoughts on the ground independence. Again, we got some kind of the ground independence in this open CPQ description because expanding on different grounds could cover all the other classical solutions. But that description is not manifest. An attempt that I think has to some extent been made in the past, but maybe one could try some more, is to give a more algebraic definition of the open string theory in terms of some abstract open string structural algebra. So after all, you have this open string psi, which is an open string function, you have some multiplication rule. The way you do actual calculations is you get to expand the functional in a complete set of vertices created in a given perturbative background. And of course, as soon as you do that, you lose manifest ground independence. Perhaps the way we should think about this is instead we define the field abstractly, and then choosing the background amounts to specifying a specific representation of the open string algebra. That might be a way to give a more background independent formulation of the open string moduli problem. But of course, for closed moduli, those that I, quantum mechanics, that I have no free applicability to make. So, string theory provides a slight modification of Young-Mills theory and gravity. Young-Mills is open, gravity is closed, that's the basic refrain of this talk. In some cases, one gets exactly formulation of gauge theories and theory of quantum gravity for strings. And this is how perhaps we can hope to solve quantum thermodynamics without using computers. The open description is in many cases simpler, perhaps more fundamental. There are several things that the dynamics of three brains is a consistent quantum theory by itself, if you just enclose the open string. And as you explore different set of open of different three brain configuration, and you send this number of three brains, you are able to recover the full string theory. So my best guess for a definition of for a full definition string theory would be let's have globe-specific theory on a very large number of D-brains. Of course, that's precisely what we do in some two-dimensional models, where this is exactly what works. Thank you.
I have two questions. One is, so if I understand it, it used to be a long while back that people tended to think the closed strings were the more fundamental and important ones, and the open sort of came along for the ride, or the ride. This really inverts the picture.
Well, that's sort of my viewpoint, if that.
Yeah, no, I understand that. So I'm just trying to say, so this would mean, if this is right, that gravity, everything about gravity is a derived concept.
That's right. That's not a new idea.
I know that's not a new idea, but in context of string theory, it seems to me it's sort of a new idea.
Not really. I mean, in some sense, the fact that you can get in ADS, you would see that very explicitly. So that's, of course, maybe that should tie with some comments about the ground dependence that I again have to make. So we have a fairly concrete idea of how to string theory in asymptotic campus in the backgrounds. The complete and correct background dependent definition is given by the dual conformal theories of the boundary. And gravity is encoded in the series of freedom of the conformal field theory. You have to present tangible this hierarchy and local dictionary. But in some sense, really, gravity is an emergent phenomenon. You look at these words made of locally independent operators, and if you are clever enough, you can find quantum gravity then, and all of the closing modes as well. So I think that's a big question which can really rephrase questions about, for example, the black hole. I mean, of course, it's usually because the questions you're really interested in solving. About the nature of quantum gravity become extremely hard to explicitly understand in the CFT description, but conceptual questions at least can make some progress. So it's clear, for example, that the CFT description is a unitary description and historical. If you believe in any SFT, at least for asymptotically unconceived backgrounds.
The other question is, where does M theory fit in all of this?
It doesn't, because I haven't, as you have seen, most of my models were either bosonic models, or low-dimensional models, or topological models. I don't really know. One of the lessons of string wild is that you, from different descriptions of the theory are used for different purposes. Some people may think that eventually one description will break down, you have to cross over to a different description. This was an attempt to say that, well, perhaps, at least for certain backgrounds, there is a principle fundamental to the definition of the open string because of freedom, and that's the full story. Then, of course, you may get some dual description wishes. Also correct, but at least this one. So, if you want to use an argument with QCD, well, QCD is the complete and correct theory of strong interactions. You do part integral of the roots, you get everything. Then, of course, at low energy, the degree of freedom transmutes into something completely different, and you may have a hard time understanding how those. derived by these guys from the freedom, but nevertheless, it's true that this is a completely fundamental theory of constructive functions. So in ADI-CFT, we do believe that the CFT on the boundary is a complete and consistent full logical definition of the full string theory in the bound.
That's not the first. I would like to challenge my mind to this.
So I have a comment about what you mean by vacuum independence.
Yes.
In ADS-CFT, any ghost person by your means gives you an unpredictable definition of string theory in ADS synthetic spaces.
Yes.
You may worry that for each set of boundary conditions, if you want to define your closed string synthetic theory, you need a different definition.
Absolutely.
And I'm not sure you would call it vacuum independence.
Well, certainly my hunch, which, I mean, if we capitalize on what we know, I think you're going to have a very hard time in relating the string theory and maximum power plants to the string theory and fed back. These are really super selective. It's clean.
Sorry?
It's clean. Yes, that's right. Yeah.
So I would say that's a bit, or maybe pretty conservative, a bit less than you would have expected, or that you would have wanted to go farther in the formulation.
Maybe, but I think. I think my hunch would be that you end up just on key. I mean, people try. The early days of it, yes, people might take the flat space theory, but that failed, I think it failed for a reason.
These are two speculations that I wonder if you could say a little bit more about each one of them. The first one was how fermionic modes might emerge out of purely bosonic strings. There were, of course, examples of that in other fields, which would be interesting to know how it might go.
Yeah, I'm not an expert on that, but I know that people have speculated that.
This is a speculation that you can have by 16 and 2016.
That's right. Or in particular.
The appropriate theory, of course, that you might get from the modes that wrap around. Basically,
the perturbative is one of the things. Right, no perturbative, you can get the perturbative. Well, that's not surprising. You do that in ordinary, you know, in the skirmer model, you get somehow it has to be some perturbative. So we know exactly, not only quantum theory, but that direction happens to you. You get quantized or you're solid for this firm.
Yes, quantum gravity. But the other speculation was about some algebra, pure C-star algebra or something would represent.
Right, that was very vague. I don't have anything.
Where would you get this algebra from?
Excuse me?
Well, where would you get the algebra instruction from?
Well, okay.
Multiplication rule. What are the elements of the algebra?
Right, of course, you have to make a guess based on cases. But the idea being that you have a space of open strip fields, and you get to get your function analysis right. So you have to specify what are the proper normalization conditions for the normal life of each one posed to our space focus fields. And one thing you must do is that to choose a condition that such as the axioms are obeyed. The axioms are obeyed. And this is extremely hard. I mean, by the way, even if you just do this in a specific, around a specific background, specifying precisely the regular conditions of your functionals is a string tricky business. I just mentioned this because it seems to me that if you want to get this in this approach, which is more manifest regarding independent, then you can't commit yourself to what is functional this time. So you must somehow rely on a strategy by properties and the background comes to choose the representation.
Yeah, but even before, what is the element of the algebra? Is it a string field or is it a functional space of string fields? In either case, you have some background in the string field. Is living in
no. Okay, so this was an attempt, this for the open modular. So I'm not, so you certainly must, in this, even in this calculation, I'm choosing the background geometry and defining. So
it's not a fully background.
It's background in many respects to open modular. So even that part we believe to be correct. I mean, that ultimately theory is background dependent because we have learned from the static transition phase that we start from one particular classical solution. We expand around that, and the string field that you get perturbatively defined around that point, in fact, is big enough to reach a point on the curve far away. So, for example, in this picture I had before, I'm not sure if I'm explaining myself well, but in this picture I had before of the parking potential. Yes. So suppose you start from the theory around your ordinary, say, space equilibrium. Then to define the open string field in actual calculation, what you do, you compute the spectrum of the theory around that particular background. So you have your set of vertex operators, and this string open string field is an arbitrary combination with arbitrary coefficient function of those vertex operators. If I were to expand around a different membrane, I would have a different set of variables. So the two theories really look differently. The action looks formally similar, but the variables I'm using are very different. And then, so the ground dependence is certainly not manifest, but the lesson is that it is in fact there because, well, you start from one particular background, you find your classical solution. Expand around the classical solution, there is some non-trivial change of value without the gravity. So that's this picture of the potential, the fact that the potential is computed using the variables which are proper of this point state. But the potential gives me the correct picture of the global configuration space.
Even though you are thinking of the closed string is somehow derived from the open string, you still need to provide the background. Or this relatively background independent formulation of the open
string? Well, even more, in this formulation, I need also to specify an open string background if I want to get started
the
next.
No, but in the one that you're conjecturing, you know,
yes.
Select the algebraic,
right.
That would still have the closed string background.
That's correct.
I think we should close it now because it's 3:30 and it's another talk we have to have. Leo is here until Friday.
Yes.
And so we'll put the last one discussion. Thank you again. I'm not sure if I'm going to say that.